And good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Other Side of Midnight. That kind of interesting time between dusk and dawn where all our assumptions we make during the daytime, when the sun is up and it's bright and it's shining and everything seems normal, at about this time of night, you know, you kind of take a second, a third look, and you say, things may not be what they appear. And we will be getting into that in some detail later in the program with my very special guest this morning. But first, I want to do an update on what we were doing last night at the end of the show. Joe Buckman is with us. Joe, of course, has been a familiar guest on this show several times. And he is back in Indiana at his father's bedside in the medical center there in southern Indiana. And Joe, what's the latest?
Well, my dad is peaceful, breathing steadily, seemingly pain-free. He's 91 years old. He'll turn 92, God willing, in July 22nd. And he's in the hospital where he once served as chief of staff. So we have a very intimate relationship with this hospital. It's physically now located over the property where the house was that I grew up in. So the time when I was growing up, the hospital was a block away, but it grew and grew and then acquired my dad's property when he retired in 1989. And eventually they tore down the house and made a parking lot. And then on top of that parking lot, they've now built their emergency room. So I've been in the hospital. I actually met with one of the administrators who also goes to my dad's church. And I said, I'd like to find the building engineer and locate where my dad's office would have been in this facility now, and perhaps we could put up a plaque there. So his office was in the house. My dad was Marcus Welby, for those people who remember that show. He was a family practice physician who had his office in our home, and that home had been built by a physician back in the 1930s, a Dr. Murphy. So my dad bought the house from Dr. Murphy's widow and practiced there. I remember asking him when I was working on my MBA, hey, Dad, why didn't you move to the professional arts building or somewhere nicer? And he said, you know, son, I was never in the practice of medicine for the money. I had no overhead, and I felt like passing those savings on to my patients. Where is that perspective in medical care today? He's my hero. I love him dearly. I'm an only child, and I feel like I'm like we're all each other have. I mean, I have a wife, I have beautiful children of my own, but my dad is a very special place for me. And here we are, literally, Richard, if you can imagine, my former home physically located inside this building where it was, and we're about two stories higher up. We're on the fourth floor. The house was only two stories. So we're literally in the air above the home that I grew up in. And I know you shared the sunrise that I witnessed here so brilliantly just an hour and a half, 2 hours after being on with you. And that sunrise lasted from the moment it peaked over the horizon. And then in one solar diameter, it was gone behind heavy overcast, and then it rained all day yesterday here, just a gentle, gentle rain. And, you know, it's the best of times, and it's the worst of times, and I can't begin to express how comforted and blessed I have felt from the prayers of your audience, and you and Robin and your producer, Em, such a sweet, sweet energy flowing out of you. It's like the grace of God himself coming from you all. And I'm standing here now at the window in my dad's room looking out on the dark, sacred night of Indiana and hoping I get to share another dawn with my dad. My daughter's here now. She's a medical doctor from Wisconsin in her residency who came down with her husband and got here about midnight. My son's here with me. My wife's due in a couple of days. And in many respects, it's really just the best of times.
Amazing. Well, I wanted to have you come back on this morning because the way I understand this physics works, the idea of distance healing, particularly backed up now by some of the experiments that Dean Radin shared with us a few nights ago, The more we ping the field, the more consciousness turns to your dad's condition. And there was nothing wrong with him. He just, you know, he had an ulcer on his foot, and because he has necropathy and he wasn't feeling anything, it kind of got away from him, and then it progressed into gangrene, and now he's in a septic condition. He's unconscious, I understand. We have two photographs on Other Side of Midnight in radio with pictures. If you look at number 2 and 3, number 2 is your dad. And your son, right, Chris?
Yes, and Christian, born on Christmas Eve.
Wow. Obviously, that's why he's named Christian.
Yeah.
And then the other picture is that sunrise you just described, and obviously digital cameras can't record what it must have really looked like, because it obviously looks like it was intensely colorful and brilliant red and, you know, dawn, the Horus dawn. Very, very symbolic. So let's all think good thoughts, and as I said last night, I'm not sure how this works technically, but from all the background and research and reading I've done and talking with Dean and others, if we just imagine your dad the way he used to be, the field takes care of it because it knows the template. It knows what he came in with, and that was him until this accident. I mean, it's such a stupid accident to die from. It's almost, like, ridiculous. So let's get beyond ridiculous.
Yeah.
And get back to, I mean, he's supposed to hang around for a while because there's more to do. More people need to feel, Joe, that there's more than simple AMA medicine.
Yeah, the allopathic tradition isn't the answer to everything. They're good for broken bones. But as naturopathic and what's the other term, chiropractic, and these other practices of medicine that the allopaths and the drug companies kind of began to push to the sidelines, and yet they have modalities of healing that are inexplicable and powerful. And my dad actually saw a naturopath when he visited me in Utah once. He had a terrible bout with gout, and a Dr. Nunn out there treated him with Cortrazine, which is what is a 2,000-year-old drug, and because of the effectiveness of that, we were able to go to Yellowstone at Christmas about 20 years ago now. So my dad has a little familiarity with some of those alternative methods. Even though he was a traditionally trained physician, he did not do invasive medicine. He often did not treat people who wanted to be treated. He had 80-year-olds that wanted their cholesterol lowered with statins and things, and they just left them alone. And he caught my attention and that of others in town when he had more patients over 100 than everyone else combined.
That's a success rate. That right there is a testimonial that the Marcus Welby technique worked.
I want to tell you, if you got a moment, a little more
about
my mom. This hospital was constructed in 1954. My mother was the third nurse hired, and she was hired to be their surgical supervisor. And in their little history display here, they've had for years an 8x10 glossy black and white photo of my mother in her surgical garb in their brand new surgical center from 1954. It looks like a torture chamber. It's just horrifying. It's out of a Frankenstein movie. But what I want you to know about my mom is this. When I came along, I ruined her surgical career, and so she took care of me until I became school age. And once I went off to school, she went back to work in this very hospital in the emergency room as the emergency supervising nurse. There were no hospitalists, no doctors at all in the building overnight, and she was it. It was her and a team of nurses. But because we lived a block away, and again, it was a block away back in the 1960s, now it's literally over the top of the house. Well, a block away, if my dad got a call and needed to go to the hospital in the middle of the night, he would wake me up, just like this night. I would be taken to the emergency room where my mom would then babysit me. It was a different era. At the age of 7, 8, 9, 10, I would help out by wheeling patients around in wheelchairs, and the nurses all wanted me to be a physician. They wanted me to watch them sew people up. By the way, this is child abuse. It's just horrifying. I actually helped one time, I helped an orderly wheel a woman to the morgue here. So there was one morning, just like that sunrise that you posted, where my mom and I were walking back to the house, and you could see the sun coming up. And my mom said, son, you know, I want you to go to medical school. You'd make a great surgeon. You have the hands of a surgeon. And I said to my mother, I couldn't do what you do. I couldn't put my hands into somebody else's body. And my mom said, son, you don't understand. They're not my hands. Every time before I go into surgery, I go alone to a quiet place in the hospital. I pray, dear God, I know I can't do this. Let my hands be yours.
Wow.
And that's when I looked at my mother like an angel. And I remember that sunrise, just like the one we saw here 20 or so hours ago. And my mother's spirit is certainly here with my dad as well. I think she'd like to be with him. That she passed away in 2003, so I'm not sure we're going to win this this desire to keep my dad here on this side, but we sure are being comforted by the beautiful energy you're creating here, and I just love you for it.
Well, the whole world is listening to us tonight, and there's a lot of people. They're all pulling for you. They're all pulling for your dad, and it's obviously, you know, whatever his will is. If he wants to join your mom, that's his choice, and this is the planet of choice, so it's his choice ultimately. But if he wants to stick around and make medical history, that energy, that opportunity, that gateway is also available.
Yeah, you can feel that door open, and I've felt it so powerfully in the last 22 hours since I was with you at the end of the show last night. And again, feel and hear my profound and abiding gratitude for that.
Hey, we're all pulling for you, and if anything, you know, develops, please let me know, okay?
I will, Richard, and God bless you, and keep up the good work.
Tell your dad we're all pulling for him.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Joe. Sometimes, you know, this show is not cut and paste. This show is not formula. This show is what it is, and frankly, I feel very honored to have the opportunity to move this further and see what we all discover. Turning to other things, miracles of this age, and we're talking about miracles, this afternoon, West Coast time, Elon Musk did it. He stuck the landing. Remember, for months now, we've been discussing this potential breakthrough in spaceflight, the breakthrough that's going to allow me to get into Earth orbit and get to the moon, and who knows, you know, when you hear what we're going to talk about next week, Mars and Pluto are maybe not far behind, because there is a stunning rate of development, and it's in that spirit that I'm trying to present things that are important that may not be acknowledged as important in the larger culture. But the reason you're here and the reason I'm here is we're at the cutting edge. We're the early warning system of our civilization, and we're trying to make a roadmap for the future, a roadmap that's positive as opposed to a lot of what you see on television. So if you go to othersideofmidnight.com and click on Radio with Pictures, at the top, item number one tonight is Musk's amazing breakthrough landing on the barge, floating in a very choppy Atlantic Ocean. If you click on the video, which Rich was able to post, it's picture perfect. It's astounding. And I got to say, George Nouri, if you're listening, of course he's on the air right now opposite us, but George, when you listen to the archive, just remember, I told you so a year ago, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and you said categorically, coast to coast, he'll never make it. Sorry, George, the future moves on. My guest tonight is going to be talking about the future by way of the past. And this is really remarkable because Jerry Wills and I have not physically spoken in probably decades, although I have followed his career and his expeditions. And what was really remarkable is he turned up not too long ago on America Unearthed, on the Walter show, that frankly is something I would highly recommend, because the author and the host, the impresario of that show, is basically digging up stuff that the mainstream, again, has been ignoring for far too long. And finally, the curve is beginning to turn, and we're beginning to think the unthinkable at a time when, you know, both Jerry and I are old enough to know that it has been unthinkable. So let me give an introduction to my guest this morning, and then we'll have a 2 hours that I think is going to be memorable. From an early age, Jerry Wills was captivated by the unknown. Jerry read all he could from authors such as Eric von Däniken and marveled at the details. Driven to know more and to explore, Jerry eventually found himself traveling through Mexico, Central and South America for extended periods, and each location he visited was rich in history and always populated with fantastic stories of the past. Exploring ancient sites fascinated Jerry. He knew the answers he sought were out there, somewhere, buried beneath the rubble and the tumbled earth of those old pyramids and temples, or hidden beneath dense foliage of the jungle. Jerry felt important answers lay waiting to be unearthed. Jerry was absolutely right. Good morning, Jerry Wills. Welcome to the Other Side of Midnight, my old friend.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, it's been a long and interesting journey. We met, I've been trying this afternoon to figure that out. I think it's been maybe 25 years ago, maybe 30, in Phoenix. I was there to do something, and you introduced me to a whole bunch of interesting people and some interesting concepts. The fact that maybe Phoenix was kind of sitting above the remains of an ancient civilization buried under a huge amount of sediments, which the more I look at the topography of Arizona from the southern part of the state all the way up to the Grand Canyon, I have a feeling that that first conversation we had is absolutely right, and there's a huge amount kind of buried under a place where the mountains that you see appear to only be the tips of mountains that extend far below the surface that we, you know, build highways on and the city of Phoenix is built on. So welcome again, and where would we like to begin? I mean, you've been involved in such astonishing things since we last talked. Really amazing things. It's hard to know. It's really kind of hard to know where to begin. What got you into, you know, formally through, I guess, the magazine first and then the TV show, actually doing some of the stuff that we talked about?
Well, really, you know, like you mentioned, I've always had an innate interest in this. I never really acted on it all that much, but I read and kept track of different explorers and different discoveries being made, and each one was interesting and unique. Sometimes I would hear things that didn't make sense, and the timeline that a lot of the archaeologists, well, most of the archaeologists at the time, were talking about, it didn't really, I don't know, it didn't ring true for me. So about 1990, I'd already traveled several different places in the world, seen things that I thought were just extraordinary. And I started a tour company that was taking people to Peru, and the tours were based on the Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield.
Oh, you mean that book where we get on an airplane and you just look down the aisle and everybody was reading that book?
Yeah.
I mean, it was really bizarre. I got on an airplane once, a Southwest Airlines airplane, and literally everybody on the aisle seats was reading that book.
Yeah, and people were carrying it with them and ran into more people in Peru that had the book, and they were all fascinated. They were looking for answers, and the tours that I created with the nod of approval from James Redfield, I spoke with him before the book was ever popular and asked him if I might do this, and he agreed. He said, that's fine, just give me credit. Well, I ended up going to Peru a lot, several times a year, and every time, because my philosophy is if you give a person kindness and respect, you get it back, and that's just universal. It doesn't matter if you're in the middle of the Amazon or the Andes or downtown in Los Angeles. You usually get that sort of thing back. Well, I made friends with a lot of folks down there, and over the course of time, there were more and more of these folks who lived there, and a lot of times they were in very outlying areas because, after all, I was in Peru. When the tour was over, I'd take off on my own for a while and see what I could find. Well, I started stumbling onto things that were just about as bizarre as and unfathomable as what you might read in one of these Eric von Däniken books.
Like what? Give us an example.
things we all know about now, but back then it was sketchy and stuff you didn't know about, like Tiwanaku, for example.
Oh yes.
Yeah, you know, how in the world did they make those holes? And how did they make these stones? And what is the idea behind this? And then I would run into ancient places that people never really went to. And the shaman would tell me, oh, well, this is, for example, the Temple of Time and Space. And it was here in time immemorial, and things are happening here, and it's really unexplainable. Give me the whole story about it. Ollantaytambo in the Sacred Valley. There are secrets there that few people ever really get in touch with. The people I take, of course, they got in touch with it because I would show it to them. But these were things that were so old in antiquity that there wasn't any rational explanation for it. You know, those granite blocks at Ollantaytambo, they're standing upright like, I think it's five dominoes, as a metaphor, just as an example. They're pink granite, but they came from a mountain way over there. How in the world did they get up from there over to here? You stand up there and look down, and you see a pyramid. But it's a two-dimensional pyramid that when the light hits it just right, it suddenly becomes a three-dimensional pyramid. It's not really up. It's an optical illusion.
But wait, was it an ancient created optical illusion?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And stones that if you were to tap on them just right, they would just ring like a bell. But these stones were high up on cliffs that you're not supposed to go up to, but I tend to get in trouble because I go places I'm not supposed to. And because I'm nearly 7 foot tall, it is one of those things I stand out like a sore thumb. But finding these things fascinated me because it was an indication to me that there was something much grander in our past than what we were led to believe. It was. Sure, go ahead.
No, I was going to say you were going to complete the sentence.
It was.
Oh, dear. We're getting interference again on Skype.
It was absolute high strangeness.
Uh-oh.
Maybe I turned my head wrong. The antenna's out of alignment. How's
that? Oh, are you on a wireless? No, we're losing you totally there.
No.
Okay. Go ahead. Sorry about this, folks. This is happening far too often to be random and accidental. Someone is deliberately interfering. So I'll tell you what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to get a phone number. If I can get a phone number from M, I will replace the call, and we will try to connect with Jerry on the landline. Are you hearing me, Jerry? Hello, Jerry, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, there you are. Okay. Yeah,
I'm here.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, why don't you write...
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Why don't you write a landline number into the Skype window that way, just in case, you know, we lose you, I can call you back on a phone.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll do that immediately.
Okay. So when did you form the magazine?
Well, the magazine was formed actually after being in Peru. We'd gone down looking for information about some images that were put into a stone. My wife, Kathy, decided that she could read these, but only if she went down there in order to see them for herself. Well, they just happened to be in a terrorist-held area.
Oh. So now, why would Kathy think she could read them? Was it in a language that she recognized? Was it hieroglyphs?
No. It was intuitive.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's not like she had any formal training to know how to read this, but she just had this hit that I think I can figure out what this is if I could just see the whole thing and not just a couple of pictures.
Ah, okay. Context.
So she and I went into this terrorist-held area. Was this
the Shining Path?
Yeah.
Oh boy, they're bad news. They were the ISIS of their era.
The Shining Path, working with the narcos down there, where the cocaine and whatever is coming out of the north central jungles of Peru. Well, we went.
Okay.
We took all the money we'd saved and we went.
I was going to say, there's a kind of a famous quote about angels that I'm thinking of.
Well, I'll tell you something. We got into, where was it? Pucallpa, which is a jungle city. We, through a couple of contacts, managed to hire a twin-engine Piper Cub, or some sort of airplane. I forgot what it's called now. And we flew and had to make an emergency landing in Juan Hui, which is even more in the middle of nowhere. Come to find out, this 20-year-old kid who owns the airplane was actually involved in some rather interesting affairs that I'll leave to your imagination. It having to do with Colombia and another country.
Yeah, so he was basically transporting. I'll tell you what, why don't we hold it there? Because I want to save some time at the bottom of the hour now. You're involved in music, and whenever I have guests that have multiple talents, I like to showcase them. You're a bassist for someone called the the Jeff Bird Project, right?
Right. It's a group, Jeff Bird Project, me, Kathy, Jeff Bird. He's the brains behind it all, you know.
Super.
And Craig Charles, who is one of the most incredible vocalists that I've ever heard. And then we have others who play guitar. We have Rob Herbert, who's on drums. He's a professional drummer, percussionist, whatever you call him. We're in a musical group.
Okay, well, this is a new song, which apparently has not been published yet, so we're privileged to debut it tonight on The Other Side of Midnight. It's called Drive, the Jeff Bird Project, with bassist Jerry Wills, who's my guest tonight. You're on The Other Side of Midnight. And my name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return. And while we're working on the background here on the break, we're going to try to fix Jerry's bass. His mic is a little bassy, so we'll be right back. Good morning, everyone, once again. We're trying to solve some of these technical problems, and it sometimes they go away and sometimes they don't. So, Jerry, are you with us? I think you have to unmute.
Yes, I am.
Ah, there you are. Okay.
So, when
we last left you, you were in an airplane, a Cessna or something like that, with a 20-year-old at the controls. And you did not know who he worked for.
Well, he worked for himself, actually, from what I was told during the flight. We ended up going in. This is how Expeditions Magazine started. We went into this area called Rio Tocachi. We went up about 85 miles back following this river up into the eastern slope of the Andes. What happened with that stone is that Kathy was successful in deciphering what was on it. It was a map.
Oh.
And it led us to five lost cities.
Oh, wow.
And during that time, we found five enormous cities up in the eyebrow of the jungle. It was because of that, we came back with this. A lot of our pictures were destroyed. The camera we had wasn't really adequate. We weren't that prepared to go back there. But we went anyway, and we came back with some photos and an incredible story. So we put that together and started Expeditions Magazine. We also had a collection of other things we had done, researching Lost City in the Grand Canyon, and just various stories around the United States.
Okay,
as a result, Expeditions Magazine was born.
On Radio with Pictures, we have a series of images that you provided. If you can go to our link and take a look and kind of give us a thumbnail sketch of what we're seeing. For instance, number 7 looks like a cook tent somewhere in the middle of a jungle, or almost in the middle of a jungle. Are you on the page?
It is. That's in a field outside. Yeah.
Okay.
Our camp. Small building with the blue.
Go ahead.
The small building with the blue, that is actually a portable shower and outhouse. The orange tent, that's our expedition tent, the small one. We went back to that terrorist-held area 2.5 years ago to finish the story. And that's a picture from that.
I see. Okay. And by the way, if you click on these, they get
picture
much
to
bigger.
The right. No. Number 8.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Number 8, that is the doorway of Aramamuru. It's one of those places I mentioned earlier in the show where people had never really heard of this place. Kathy, I went there first many, many years ago and started investigating the...
So this is this
story
is
about how this, I came to
this is this
find
bizarre
this, place.
This is this bizarre doorway in stone that's not really a doorway.
Right, it's a portal of some sort, like a bidirectional wormhole.
I tell you what, Jerry,
information on
Jerry. Can you hear me? Can you hear
yes.
me? Yeah, because we're,
yes.
I think we're going to switch to the phone and see if that yes. works. So why don't you hang up Skype, and I will call you on the phone, because this is going to drive us nuts, and which, of course, is what someone is trying to do. But we will not succumb to the obvious. So I'm going to call you on the phone, hang up Skype, and we'll see if we can do something to get around these folks. This is getting pretty tiresome.
All right.
Okay, I think he's hung up. We're trying Skype. Trying a call, actually. Let me do this. Okay. Sorry, folks, but, you know, this seems to be the pattern that someone is trying to inculcate. Jerry, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Well, that sounds much better. Much better. I'm really sorry for this, but... You know, there's somebody out there or somebodies, and we don't know how it goes, and every night now they're interfering with every show we're doing, and it's kind of pathetic because either they don't have anything else, they need a day job, or they need a girlfriend, or it's a little more official. We just don't know.
Well, I've had the same problems on my show, so don't worry. You're not alone.
Oh, we know that. So you went back to the place. You actually didn't tell us about the whole terrorist incident, and I don't want to kind of flash past that too fast.
Well, basically we went back in there, and we wondered why we had to wear a certain item on our clothing all the time, and one day I didn't. everyone was warning us not to go because it was too dangerous. People were actually crying because we were going, saying, please, you'll never come back alive. Well, when I didn't wear this particular little badge on my shirt one morning...
And who gave you the badge?
The crew. It was the people guiding us back in there. I thought they were just farmers, you know?
Okay.
They pack animals. We had like 4 pack animals and a huge expeditionary thing with us and tents and everything else, but we didn't know what we were going into. We really weren't prepared. But when I didn't wear this, the crew, call them the crew, the main guy was like really agitated and scared and worried. He said, where is it? Where is it? You didn't lose it, did you? I said, no, it's right here in my pocket. You've got to wear that all the time. Well, the reason is because the snipers wouldn't shoot us.
Oh.
It was right over my heart and Kathy's heart, and that's where they would shoot you if they were going to. And they would look through their sniper scope and see you were wearing that. That meant you had permission to be there. So,
I must say, in the expeditions I've done with Robin, we've never had to undergo that particular ritual, and frankly, I don't think I want to. So what was the whole objective of going to a place where you could get killed at any moment? What was the prize? What were you finding?
There was a lost city back there at the top of a mountain. We don't know what it's called. The people who have cattle let them roam around in the jungle. Twice a year they go and find them and pull the ones they want to butcher.
Mm-hmm.
This particular lost city had streets that were paved, had curbs, wound its way up around the mountain, and it had everything was made for people my size.
The
doorways, the chairs.
Oh.
And it was as though they had just walked away and left it. So we wanted to see this.
Oh my gosh. So we're talking 7 to 9 foot people.
Well, at least 7 foot tall.
Okay.
According to everything that we saw.
Okay.
And
the reason we don't have any pictures of this up tonight is because what happened to the images? What happened to your pictures?
Well, we got caught in a torrential rainstorm at about 8,500 feet. And when it rains down there, it's like you're standing under a fire hydrant.
Yeah, I've been in tropical rains. Yes, it's exactly the description.
And I had a Canon A1, which is a real good camera, good lens, and it just got soaked.
Were you using film?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This is that primitive. You were using film.
Yeah, they might have had, I don't think they even had digital cameras back then.
Okay, well.
Digital cameras were not. So
for all the millennials in our audience, they don't know what film is. They've never seen film, so
it's kind of plastic feeling. So.
But when you dunk it in rain and you dunk your camera in rain too, it doesn't work after that.
No, the camera just seized up. The film was all wet.
Oh my! What a shame!
It was just I was just heartsick about it. Well,
have you looked for this site on Google Earth?
You can't find it. That area is, yeah, we have, and we know where it's at. But the resolution of that area on Google Earth is just miserable. It's like blurred out. You from a distance, you can kind of see.
Right.
If you know what you're looking
for. If you know what's there, you know what you're looking at.
Oh, sure. I've got the GPS coordinates. We had a GPS with us the whole time tracking every step.
How difficult would it be to get back in there and get some nice digital, high-quality, high-res, high-def? And video?
We went back.
Oh. Okay.
When we got out of there, we had to be flown out by a helicopter because we could not get out of there. Kathy was the only one who wasn't injured. We went back 10 days later and got as far as where this picture was taken, actually, Natal.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to wait there because our guides said, you have to wait here for a couple of days. So we did, and then, you know, it was raining. They came to me one morning and said, we have to leave right now. We have to leave and go back.
Hmm.
I said, why? And they said, don't worry about it. We have to leave right now. So we left. And we hiked back about 20-some-odd miles through the jungle to this next little village where we were, that's as far as we made it in a day. And we decided we were going to stay there for a couple days. They said that was a safer place to be, which was my first clue there was something not right. By the third morning, the special forces showed up. And
this is Peruvian special forces?
Yeah.
Okay.
They look like 14, 15-year-old kids with machine guns.
Hmm.
Black stuff on their face and jungle attire. And they were everywhere, up in trees and buildings, under bushes. The comandante came right directly to where Kathy and I were staying and wanted to know, you know, I'm looking for Jerry Wills.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'm gulping, going, yeah, what can I do for you?
Oh, he's that tall guy over there.
So he says, you have to leave right now. So pack it up and leave right now. We'll escort you out of here. What was happening is that we didn't have permission to go back a second time.
A permission from whom?
And from the people who run drugs and...
Okay, the Shining Path
and yeah. All those.
Okay, so why would the Peruvian government commandante of a special forces group give a damn that you didn't have permission from the terrorists whose territory you were trespassing on?
Because they had sent a death squad after me and my party.
Oh, because you didn't get permission the second time.
Didn't have permission. And didn't think I needed it, really.
Hmm.
Well, apparently I did.
Remind me, Jerry, not to sign up for one of your expeditions.
But they're a lot of fun, Richard.
Well, it sounds like if your life is boring and you basically have nothing left to do here on Earth... Sure, that's an interesting way to. Okay, we don't have a whole
back.
Amount of time. So you never really got back and got any pictures or data of this ancient city?
No, but
damn.
We did find something even more remarkable.
Okay.
And what we found was something that we call the Doomsday Stone.
The Doomsday Stone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's the reason why we went back a couple of years ago and went back in with limited permission.
With limited permission. What's the difference between permission and limited?
Well, they're watching us really closely, and at any time they can change their mind.
Jerry, can I ask a dumb question? Given the fact that we've got, you know, an entire planet of ancient cultures and ancient civilizations the mainstream has never talked about, what made you continue to go back to a place where terrorists were guarding an ancient city if it's only one of thousands of interesting ancient relics of a previous set of epochs that you could explore safely?
Well, two reasons. Number one, we believe that there are records that were left at this one particular place that we wanted to get access to, that would give us some further inclination towards whether it was extraterrestrials or an advanced ancient civilization that somehow became extinct.
A library? An archive? A time capsule?
Yeah. Well, maybe. You know, they kept records, and it wasn't always the quipu or carving things into stone. They kept records, and we wanted to find their library, and we had a pretty clear idea this is where it was going to be found. We didn't know for sure.
Okay.
But until we find it, we'll never know for sure. That was the reason why we wanted to go there.
Based on your first trip, when you actually got to the city and you're looking at roads and curbs, and basically it looked, what, kind of modern, like a modern suburb?
Yeah.
Oh,
except
wow.
Everything is made of stone.
Wow. Okay, well, that's why it survives.
There are places up in the Andes that are 2 and 3 stories tall that have central heating and cooling that are so old in antiquity that no one knows who made them.
Okay, leads to my next question, which is, did you have any way to estimate the age of this city?
you know, it's all guesswork. It wasn't until we found the Doomsday Stone that we kind of had a clue of what might have happened to that place. But everything that we've been able to uncover so far tells us that these people had advanced technology, and it didn't come from that continent. It came from the European continent. We've successfully managed to track who these people were and why they were there and why they were able to do what they had done. And it wasn't until we uncovered a few facts that had to do with some very dramatic changes in structure of cultures, civilizations, and governments back in antiquity, going back, let's say, to the time of the Phoenicians.
Okay.
That culture, and also a more recent event that changed, again, the face of the earth.
So wait a minute. Are you saying that this may have been a Phoenician colony? Because you talked about transportation of knowledge and data and technology from Europe to the New World.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we're talking Phoenicia-era construction, and is there a similarity in building techniques, architecture, things like that?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I mean, it's so uncanny that if you didn't know what you were looking at or where you were and you saw the two side by side, you'd say the same people made these things.
Hmm.
So it's that kind of profound similarity. It isn't just sort of like, it is exactly like.
Ah, so then my next question is, where are academics in terms of this obvious transplant and colonization, which makes the Vikings and all of that, you know, kind of look like a candle flame compared to an H-bomb?
Well, to give you some idea, this one gal, her name's Sandra something, I don't remember her last name, but she's a big deal archaeologist down in Peru. When she heard about us having found the city, because we turned the information over to the Peruvian government so it would be protected, we never made the location public in order to protect it, because there's ungodly amounts of gold and tombs and relics in this place. It's just mind-boggling. So
it would suffer the same fate as Egypt has suffered from plundering and under the guise of archaeology and all that.
Sure. So she's Sandra Gillen, something like that, and she says, no, that's just an old Spanish mission. There is nothing like that there. I've been looking for it for 30 years, and there's nothing there. Well,
that's one heck of a reaction. If you've been looking for something and a guy walks in the door and says, I found it, and then you say, no, it can't be?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. She just completely dismissed us. And that's what academics have been doing over and over for so many of the things that we found.
Now, do you think she actually felt that way, or she was part of a cover-up to make sure this never sees the light of day?
I don't know if it was ego or if it was a cover-up. It could have been a little bit of both, perhaps.
And, of course, you had no proof because the film got destroyed.
Well, yeah, almost all of it. We had a few pictures that I was able to salvage that were still, you know, printable, and they were of the Doomsday Stone.
Okay.
And that's why we went back. And we got back there. We did a full documentary on that that is still in the can. We're going to try to get that put together sometime this summer.
Okay, do we have a photo of the Doomsday Stone in Radio with Pictures?
Yeah, just go down here a few. Item numbers 15 and 16 and 17.
Excellent. So let's click
on
15. The
thing that stood out.
Remember, okay, when you click on it, this enlarges.
Okay. This is on top of a mountain. In dense jungle. Well, you know what jungles look like, Richard. And eastern slope of the Andes. This is a stone, basically, all that was out from the earth was where that white part is, back ways. The rest of it was buried.
Behind the guy with the
when
water
we went
bottle.
There,
who's sprinkling water on what you've excavated. Obviously, you've dug away the earth, and he's trying to make it. We all saw this movie in National Treasure 2, where you put water on the engravings and they become clear.
So we were taken up there, and it was the dirt was dug away from it, and it was shown to us. And then they covered it back up when we left. When we came back, the same guys were there, and their children were now grown up. It was 13 years later. And so they took us back up to the mountain, and they pulled the dirt away from it so we could see it and take pictures of it.
Ah, now, did they put the dirt over it to cover it up so it wouldn't erode?
Yeah, they didn't want anybody to mess with it.
Yeah, because that's a standard archaeological technique. If you can't in one season excavate something properly, you cover it back up so when you come back the next season, nothing's happened to it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now, take a look at item number 16, and this is the one that intrigued me so much when we were there, because that kind of reminds me of Enki from the Sumerians.
Yeah. Yeah, so we've got a head, we've got facial features, and then we've got a body with coils that looks like he's surrounded by an anaconda.
Well, that could be. I mean, there's a lot of ways of seeing it. To me, it looked like a person with something on their back with wings and something outstretched in front of them.
Okay.
Standing with, I don't know what that is under there.
But there's no writing and there's no depiction of who this individual is.
No.
Okay.
Well, take a look at the number 17.
Going to 17.
There are only two references. Only two references in the entire Amazon that we've been able to locate. If anyone knows of others, I'd like to hear about it. But this is the heart-faced people. I don't know who they are.
Oh.
But this particular face is really rare. And what you have here is like the sun with a rainbow over the top. And if you take a look, there's like the circle with the dot in the center of it.
Right.
That's the thing up on the
right hand side. You got like looks like a carved out circle or like a donut with a hole.
Right.
And you say that's supposed to represent the sun?
Possibly? No, I think that face.
Oh, the face. Okay. Well, what's the dot with the hole in it represent?
Well, we don't know, but we think that it represents something that happened because you're not seeing the entire panel in proper perspective. You're seeing a couple pieces off of it.
Okay.
With
a lot of lichens over it.
Some of these are rubbed off so you get this much of it. But what you have here on this panel is a story. And the story is read from right to left. And the story talks about something that came across in the sky that it caused all kinds of who knows what to take place, but it was pretty awful. And apparently a lot of people died. And the end result is another face like number 17 that's on the left side of the stone that just looks horrified. And if you look closely on number 15, you see another face on this side of the stone that he's cleaning off. And this face is actually of a woman's body. A woman squatting to have a child, which is how they would have children there. They would squat down and have a child.
Letting gravity do the work.
Right. And that's what this particular scene would fully illustrate, and we have those pictures in the video. But that's what's there. There's a man's face to the right of it, which is like the father, and there are two smaller faces off to the left behind this fellow, which you can't see right now, which look like two small children.
Okay, so tell you what, let us stop there because I want to highlight the videos. If you go to Radio with Pictures, Jerry's Items, number one says Expedition TV Videos. That link takes you to your pages where you have these videos of these expeditions. Well, they're two-hour videos or something?
Oh, not quite that long. We keep them short.
Okay.
Somewhere between 20 minutes and 45 minutes.
So the full story of the things we're only going to be able to touch on tonight can be found in these videos on this website through link number one under your items. And because we're at the top of the hour now, we're going to take a break, and I want to give us a little more time to play more of your music from the Jeff Bird Project. So, Keith, take it away.
Thank you.
My guest this morning is Jerry Wills. We're discussing ancient civilizations and how you find them and how you verify them and how you maybe try to date them and figure out who they were. And sometimes you have to walk into territory that angels would fear to tread. You're on the other side of midnight. My name's Richard C. Hoagland. The Jerry Bird Project. We shall return. It's like we're walking on air. Love is a secret we share. In the heat of the night, I'll take you, turn you, hold you forever. Tell me, we'll be like this together forevermore. I can feel my senses come alive. I can see the fire in your eyes. I get so excited when And we are back on the other side of midnight with my guest this morning, Jerry Wills, and we're discussing his rather interesting and dangerous expedition to the remote part of the Peruvian Andes, the eastern side, where he found at the top of a mountain an ancient city which looked very modern, and he dates provisionally to the time of Phoenicians in the Old World. And guess what? A few miles away there is this stone, this frieze, of carved effigies, which has been buried and obviously then preserved, and you think that that's the story of how these people died and something that happened in the sky celestial that triggered their demise.
Well, that's what we theorized when we first saw this stone, because if you saw the whole story there, it'd certainly be a head scratcher. Because it looks like it's telling a tale about something flying overhead, and they're all looking and kind of freaked out by it. When we went back 2.5-3 years ago, we were able to get as much documentation as we could ever want. And it was about the same time Kathy was doing research on a whole series of other pieces. A good friend of ours, John Shooter, and his wife, Sally, were helping us with information from over in Europe. And suddenly, worlds collided, and we had a complete idea of what this stone was telling us about. Pieces that we had found in various places that made no sense, suddenly everything came together, and it made a lot of sense. And not to be vague about it, but instead, what we have here is a one person or one group's telling the story of what they saw coming across the sky and how it rained devastation down upon them or their local area. This same event took place over in Europe as well, and we're pretty certain that it continued onward across the Pacific Ocean and really caused a bit of a cataclysm farther east and south of the South American continent. And surprisingly, and tying this in with Scott Walter and the stories he's done, Kathy's found a connection between all these events and why the people in Chichen Itza just left and left everything and took off, and why there's a pyramid in Georgia that has a depiction on it of a celestial event. All these pieces fit together, and then
Georgia meaning the state in the United States?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we found this huge, this huge boulder made of iron nickel in the Amazon jungle in northwestern jungles of Peru that is a meteor or a meteorite. It crashed down, and it's right there. And so, we think all these things are interrelated.
So you think this was the artistic depiction of an ancient asteroid impact that basically reorganized civilization?
It wasn't an asteroid, Richard. It was a comet.
Okay.
And the comet occurred in 562 and completely incinerated England.
Oh, that one. Okay. Well, that's getting pretty precise. The only reason I said asteroid is because when I go back to that frieze, when I go back to the carving, the donut with the hole in it does not look like comets. The comets are called hairy stars. They don't have sharp outlines. You know, the part that really does the damage is so small you can't even see it until just seconds before it impacts, given those speeds. So it would imply to me it was some other celestial object, but you identified this now with the comet of 562.
Yeah.
And we're getting extraneous noise on the line. I don't know why. Someone's mic is not muted. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, we basically found evidence linking all these pieces together, which is why we haven't released this particular video yet about the Doomsday Stone, because this story is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and more and more details coming out now that we've been able to piece all these things together. You know, we always wondered, why is it when we go to Tiwanaku, for example, that part of those statues seems to have been glazed, like, from huge amounts of heat. What's the reason for that? And other parts aren't. Well, because the statues were lying down in the sand, and that's the only part that was exposed.
Ah, okay. Can I go back to Can I go back to that frieze for a moment? What did the birthing woman symbolize? What do you think that meant?
Well, after all was said and done, it was the resurrection of life and the repopulation of their people.
Okay.
And that's what our take on it is. You know, that's not an academic statement at all, but that's what we understood. That's how we interpreted it.
Okay.
It could mean, you know, anything, I suppose. But the other thing that we could not find this last trip was a series of stones that were like tombstone markers, really, but quite large. And they were populating this field, which now is just jungle. It's just thick, which is the reason why we couldn't find it. We knew where to look, but it was just so dense we couldn't even get into it.
Wait a minute. Between the time you've been there the first time and now, the jungle had grown up around this field with these standing stelae, these standing stones in it?
Yeah. Well, 13 years.
Okay. So why was it clear the first time? Who was keeping it clear?
Because they had cleared the park.
And these people then stopped clearing it?
Well, they stopped clearing it because they just got tired of doing it, I suppose. But that's where they had their cows.
I see. Okay. See, unless you ask, you never find out the details. And the details are important to get the big picture, so...
Yeah, of course. And this is, you know, high above this little village that they don't even have a pop machine. you can't buy a Coke.
Oh, my God. A place on earth you can't buy a Coke. Wow. Okay, we don't have much time, so I kind of want to move on here because you looked at a lot of civilizations that appear to be a lot more ancient than 562.
Oh, sure. Well, then that's where Tiwanaku comes in. At Tiwanaku and the doorway at Aramamuru.
Did you get over to Pumapunku, which is kind of a suburb of Tiwanaku?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, did you know that there's a paved highway that's out in the desert west of Pumapunku, about I think it's 25, 30 kilometers.
Are we talking an ancient paved highway?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's pretty much covered up with sand right now, but if you know where to go and start digging, you can find it. Parts of it are exposed once in a while from the storms, wind storms and such. It's, you know, you're up there 14,000 feet. But
I've never seen a picture.
It goes all the way. No, you won't find any because archaeologists don't want anybody to know about it. They don't want anyone to start thinking that there was actually any high technology going on there, I suppose.
Hmm.
But it's a pretty closely held secret. It goes all the way from Tiwanaku and goes all the way down to the Pacific Ocean. And it continues from Tiwanaku and goes over the Andes to the eastern side of the Andes, and it hooks up to an old Viking trail that exists that goes all the way to Brazil. It's about 1,800 miles long.
A biking trail with a B?
Yes.
Did they have bicycles way, way back then? Or are you just kind of saying it looks like a biking trail?
No, not biking. Viking, as in guys with horned helmets.
Oh. Now, why would you... You mean you think the Vikings actually got as far south as South America?
We're absolutely certain of it.
Okay, well, come on. That's new news, you know. That's why I thought you were saying B when you were saying V. By the way, for people who are calling, we're going to take calls after the bottom of the hour, so... Just please hold off on your calls. And I'd like to go through some of the rest of these images because obviously they're reflective of other expeditions and places you've been and things you found. So where would you like to dive back into the images?
All right, let's go to number 14.
Okay.
Number 14 is, I guess you made a bigger picture.
Yeah, just click on them.
That is part of an aqueduct system. Right at this point, we're at about 14,000 feet. This aqueduct system goes up farther into the Andes quite a ways, and it was to transport water from a sacred lake that had life-giving properties that was taken all the way down to towns. The name of the town, I remember. Maybe Kathy can refresh.
So when you say viaduct, are we talking about the open waterway between the cliff and the flat part to the right? Where we see the reflection? It looks like it's been incised into the rock, cut very deep, and it kind of hugs this cliff, this little portion. I don't know what the scale is. This is an aerial picture or a ground level picture?
This is ground level picture. That's actually about an 8 foot wide span there that the rock has just been smoothed off as a walkway. And you find this along with stairs to go up and down very easily as you go through the mountains following this.
Hmm.
At one point, to get the water from point A to point B, they had to go through a mountain, through a whole mountain. It is a hole that is absolutely, perfectly, cylindrically shaped. If you shoot a laser down it, it's absolutely for a long way. I mean, it's more than a mile. It doesn't deviate.
And we have a picture of that?
No, we don't have a picture of that.
Oh, we don't. Oh, darn. Darn.
Yep, sorry.
So,
an archaeologist friend of ours told us about this. It's called Cumbamayo, and this is the world's the only aqueduct that's been found in South America that I know of, anyway, that I've been told about, where it actually uses hydraulic pressure to control the flow of water. Now, this we've seen. Picture, we have pictures where it just goes through one side of a hill and out the other side of the hill, carved right into stone.
Now, when you say carved, when you say carved, is it carved in the sense that you can see tool marks, or is it kind of like a huge laser just blasted through the rock?
Well, you can see some tool marks.
Okay, so it was done with conventional techniques, you think?
It, oh, the name of the city is Cajamarca. Anyway, no, take a look at number 9.
All right.
And you'll see what I'm talking about. This is a tunnel. It's got water in it, of course. It's what it was made for.
Right.
This tunnel is about 20 feet beneath the surface of the earth. But it's not just dirt, it's just rock. And that light you see there, where it goes, and there's like another little tunnel opening there, that goes on into the mountain. That goes on into the mountain. That second image underneath there is like two dots, one above the other. That's just a reflection in the water.
I see.
But that light that you see there is because they went through the mountain. They needed light. So what do? They carve these great deep holes into the earth.
You mean they carve skylights?
Yes.
Holy cow.
You can see them on satellite. If you use Google Earth and knew where to look, you could see them from space.
Oh, my God.
That clear and distinct. And it goes on and on and on through mountains.
Now, these walls look like they were carved by technology, by pickaxes or something, you know, something that would basically take a long time and a lot of guys to do.
Yeah, and these walls are made out of granite.
What? That's granite?
Yeah.
What in granite. The world can carve granite like it was butter? That looks like it's been just troweled out like you were troweling out wet cement.
Well, take a look back here on this waterway on number 14.
Okay.
That's granite. And they smoothed off this area just so they have a walkway.
Oh, my God.
Now, here's the curious thing, Richard. There is no debris anywhere. We searched and searched and searched. We spent hours and days searching for the debris from having done this. And some of these waterways go down 15 feet, just a channel, just like you're looking at right there, right into solid granite. 15 feet down and about 4 foot wide.
So that little channel between the cliff and the walkway is 4 feet wide?
No, that one isn't.
Okay.
That one's deep. See, remember I told you they were using hydraulic methods in order to control the flow of water.
I didn't ask you what you meant by that.
Well, that's what it is. They used width and depth in order to control the flow of water, and then they had buffers where they would actually come forward, jog to the left a piece, jog to the right a piece, jog to the right again, then straight, and then left, and then straight again.
This is incredibly sophisticated hydraulic engineering in ancient times, and we don't have any idea of the age, right?
No idea of the age. But this is coming from a lake up about 18,000 feet, bringing water down to Cajamarca, which has plenty of water, by the way. It is the place that is full of hot springs and hot pools. It's where the Inca would go and basically live there because of the perfect climate and all these amazing hot springs.
So then the question is, if you live in a place with all kinds of water and hot springs, why are you spending all this effort to bring water from the top of a mountain down to the valley and have to basically move mountains to do it?
Yeah, that's what we're trying to figure out, too.
Okay.
That's episode 14 of Expeditions TV. It's called Cajamarca, Sacred Water.
Okay.
And it's the only thing we could come up with. There's some reason it was sacred, but we don't know why.
Well, I think I know.
Those hot springs are certainly sacred.
Jerry, I think I know. And you and I have to get together after the show and kind of put notes together because we've been doing expeditions and we figured out that the reason these guys are doing this stuff is because of a physics, and the water is imprinted with the physics, and if you drink the water, you will change physiologically, biologically. It's special water. The same thing was going on in ancient pre-dynastic Egypt. And that's a whole other story, but that's what I think could be going on here based on our research.
Well, and I have to agree with you, because there's something very unique about this water. We don't know what it is.
Have you tested it? Have you tried measuring stuff?
This water is not the water from that place now. Because of landslides, part of the waterway has landslides collapsed into it. So this is basically runoff water from the mountains.
Okay. Have you tested the lake?
No, we haven't gotten to the lake.
Oh, really? Why not?
That's what we're hoping to get. Well, because it is a long, long way from where this picture was taken.
Hmm.
It's because right here we're at 14,000 feet on number 14, and the lake is about 19,000 feet. Yeah. We know where it's at, but getting to it, that is a bit difficult.
Okay, so is the
hiking up a mountain.
Is the limitation money to properly equip an expedition to get to where you ultimately want to go, which is the source of this water?
Yeah, that's the only limitation.
Okay, so how are you funding your expeditions? Because one of the things this show does is it raises funds for people doing interesting things. We're going to raise some money for Dean Radin. We're raising money for an M-Drive project, which we'll be discussing at much greater length next week. And we've been quite successful. So I throw it out there. Jerry, if you need funding, what you need to do is to develop a protocol, come back on the show, lay out what you're going to do, where you're going to do, how you're going to do it. And this audience, literally it's around the world, they will help. We know because they've done it before.
Okay. Well, I'll take you up on that. We'll certainly get together and talk.
And for all those folks who are calling in, please, when I say something, please listen. Don't call till the bottom of the hour. Jerry and I have a few minutes left, and I have tons of more stuff to go through. So let's continue to go through these pictures, because the pictures tell the story.
All right. Let's go immediately to number 13.
Number 13.
That is standing on top of a mountain in northern Bolivia. We're at about 16,000 feet here. And the reason why this picture is so unique is because you can see in the distance there, those white-capped mountains are actually volcanoes. And so we went off right after we left.
Kind of looks like New Mexico.
Yeah, it does. This is the Altiplano in northern Bolivia. And the reason why it's important is because this is the view that we have when we're standing on top looking at number 12.
Okay.
Number 12 is...
See, we have this weird time lag with Skype, so when I say something, you don't hear me. I'm not quite sure why we're having a time lag. So we'll go to number 12.
Okay, number 12 is a footprint in stone. This is sandstone. It is number 2 of 3. Number 1 was absconded with.
Oh, no, wait a minute. I'm not seeing the footprint. Where's the footprint?
Well, you have to look closely, because this is the only picture that I have that I could really make out what I was looking for myself.
Okay.
The heel is over here on the left side of this rectangular
fissure in the ground.
Busted away part of rock.
Right.
Yeah. And to the right, that's where this is the left foot. So the ball of the foot's here on the right, and the toes. This was mud. Mud and sandstone mixed together. Running your fingers in there, you can tell what it is. It's a little more difficult to see it. If you saw the very first footprint, then it would be a no-brainer. You could tell really easily. Mm. I probably should have sent that, but...
Well, you could still send it. We can still post it. If you could send that to Em, and she'll get it over to Rich and Keith, because I'm frankly, I got to say, Jerry, I don't see a footprint. Sorry.
Okay. Well, you'd have to see number 1 in order to make out.
Okay, well, if you can, either you or Kathy, send number 1, and we'll post that side by side, because we got to see, if there's a footprint here, I want to see the footprint. Now you're basically thinking this footprint was impressed in mud that then became sandstone, which means it's got to be one hell of a lot of years old.
Well, the Bolivian government says it's 11 million years old. geologists say that this is a stratum of sandstone mud mix that is between 2 and 15 million years old.
Okay.
So no one really knows how old it is, at least 2 million years old.
Right.
It's when this area was at much lower elevation and it was a swamp. The intriguing thing is, this is a human footprint that's in now solid rock that was once mud, and it was once mud at least 2 million years ago, and by some estimates, maybe 15 million years ago. That violates contemporary archaeological thinking.
Exactly.
And we wanted to get back to this site because we wanted to do a casting of it. A casting of it would certainly prove beyond any doubt that it's a human footprint.
But it still wouldn't...
There are characteristics...
Go ahead.
There are characteristics of this particular footprint that match number one that are genetically identifiable to a specific race of people. And... Anyway, it has a great deal of significance when you get back there and get that casting.
I'll tell you what, we're coming up on a break, the final break at the bottom of the hour. We're going to play some more Jeff Bird music, and while we do that, you can find the image that shows the footprint leading up to this footprint, and we can get that to Rich so we can get it posted, because remember, this is a data-driven show, and if we say there's a footprint, we better show a footprint.
All right, let me see if I can find it.
But we don't have to do it right now. If
actually.
Yeah. So, what are we looking at in number 11? This looks really interesting.
That is at Silistani. That's also in southern Peru. It's not far from the doorway of Aramuru. And
the doorway of where?
Here, Aramuru.
Aramuru.
That's the... that's the doorway that doesn't seem to go anywhere.
Oh, okay. That's image number, what is it, 8?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're holding a compass?
Well, if you take, right. There are two spots on the spiral that one is magnetic north and one is magnetic south, and it's very strong. You can start feeling but you can start detecting from this distance where I'm at.
Oh, my God, that must be a hell of a magnetic field.
Yeah.
For you to pick it up that far away.
Specific. It's very specific in one spot, not the rest of the stone. Just one spot near the bottom of the spiral is, let's say, north, and another spot up closer to the center of the spiral is specifically south.
And what's the rock made of?
And the rock is, what is that called? It's volcanic rock.
Basalt?
Basalt, that's it.
Yeah, dark basalt with a lot of iron in it. I tell you what, we're about the bottom of the hour. Let's have some more Jeff Bird music. My guest this morning is Jerry Wills. We're discussing ancient archaeology, ancient civilizations, and ancient enigmas. I love ancient enigmas. That's the way I came into all this, through the ancient Martian enigma doorway. You're on the other side of midnight. That's Jeff Bird's band in the background. This cut is called, I'm not quite sure. All right, someone will tell me. Or they won't. Anyway, you can probably pick it up if you go to Other Side of Midnight Radio with Pictures. It's one of the cuts. Oh, So You Think You Can Cry. Thank you, M. We'll be right back. And we are back on the other side of midnight. I want to compliment Keith for getting all this music organized and redigitized and relit, whatever he has to do over there. He did it all in record time and posted it. It's on the site. If you go to Radio with Pictures, just scroll down. You'll see all these cuts tonight. And it's not easy, and he did it in record time, and he's playing them from the control room so I can focus on my guest, and I appreciate everyone and their yeoman service. Okay, we've got a huge number of pictures swirling around who want to ask you questions. You want to answer a couple questions, then we'll dive back into your story?
Sure.
Okay, let's take Torch here. Torch, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, we're far, far afield. We're just north of Bariloche.
There you go.
And I was going to ask Jerry, by the way, before I forget, if he's ever been to Bariloche. Have you?
I'm sorry, what's the name of the place?
Bariloche. It's at the base of the Andes in Argentina.
No, I've not been that far south.
Okay, because someone sent me, when they knew you were going to be on, they sent me an email, you got to ask him about his expedition to Bariloche. And I thought, come on, there can't be that much of a synchronicity, given that we've been talking about that place for the last 2 weeks. The president just visited there with 7 mysterious tetrahedral hours. But if you don't know what it is or where it is and haven't been there yet, maybe we'll go together. You seem to be good in a terrorist situation. It was an old Nazi stronghold after World War II. It's got some incredible mystery, and frankly, I'd like some company if I go there, and a 7-foot guy who knows what he's doing sounds like someone I want to have with me.
Oh, we'd have a great time, Richard.
Okay. Torch, what else?
Two things I want to address. One is the aqueducts are probably formed and carved to create structured water.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yep. And two, the doorway, the devil's doorway that you were at there kneeling and putting your head against the rock, I'm curious about the tones that you were using and when you supposedly had disappeared into it or whatever. Could you explain that? And has anybody ever come back that has disappeared?
Super questions.
Well, yeah, good questions. As far as the tones go, they were some really abstract sounds that I was given by a shaman. Long story, of course. But
of course.
Essentially, he suggested that I try these, but to be very, very careful. And I didn't think it was real. So I went there after Kathy and I were married. We went there, and I tried it.
This was, what, 97?
And, 98, I think, 99,
okay.
Somewhere in there. Anyway, it was, you know, what happened, you know, thumbnail sketch. I'm making the tones. I get real dizzy. I feel like I'm falling. And all this noise, like 1,000 tires losing air all at once.
Oh, my gosh. This is picture number 8. For folks that want to see the background to what he's describing, go to picture number 8, Radio with Pictures, click on it. It's that huge fake doorway in the rock that's been carved, obviously, for a reason. And you uttered these specific tones, and then you heard all this stuff.
Yeah, and I basically felt like I was falling. Well, for Kathy, she's when the other people there with us, we were on a tour to Peru, and I had a group there. And these other folks who were there, they're in attendance. It's the middle of the night. We're cold. I've got on this big white jacket. It was London fog. Very, very warm, down-filled jacket. So you can imagine how big it would be for me, and I'm in front of this dark thing, so I'm pretty easily seen. But Kathy said that I started glowing with an eerie, strange glow.
Glowing?
And I was just gone.
Is this high noon?
Yeah. No, huh. Middle of the night. So I just vanished, according to them. And then Kathy's thinking, well, we just got married. What's happened?
Boy, he's really gone a long way to bug out on me.
And the people that were there, they basically were pretty flipped out as well. And then after a short time, there was another glow, and I was back, and I fell back out of the doorway and was lying on the ground.
And during this period, you felt you were falling, but you didn't. What did you see? Anything?
That's a very long story, Richard.
Well, then we got to come back for part two, because I got huge numbers of people stacked up. By the way, Torch, I want to echo what you just said. It just hit me, Jerry, as you were talking about the stone. I know why they dug that all the way from the top of the mountain, the lake there, to the bottom, because just the fall down that mountain and the vorticity will create structured water, embody the field, and when it gets to the bottom and you drink it or you put it on your plants or whatever, they live better.
Oh, yes. They create living water. It's
yep,
a beautiful thing.
Schauberger. You're familiar with Schauberger, right, Jerry?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what it is. It isn't anything magic about the water. It's the process of getting it from the top under gravity to the bottom and all the vorticity through that hydraulic engineering. Talk about sophisticated science.
Yeah. Hey, I won't hold you guys up. Take care.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, we've got a bunch of folks circling the field. Ryan, you're up. You're on.
You hear me?
Yep.
Oh, hi, Jerry. This is Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
Hey, thanks for coming on. I know it's real late where you're at. I know Jerry a little bit.
Aren't you in Arizona?
Me? No,
yeah,
I'm
Jerry.
In Washington.
No,
I
Jerry.
Am. Yeah, I'm in Arizona.
Yeah. It's only 1:30 out there.
Yeah, no big deal.
No big deal.
I get used to it. But I was hoping you'd have time to, Jerry, to discuss your trip to Greece. When you, I followed your work for a long time. When there was something weird happened. Do you remember that story?
Well, it basically was meeting up with some folks there, and as it usually turns out, we meet up with some folks that have some quite interesting tales to tell. Basically, thumbnail sketch is that this crew was working to create a digging underneath of Greece for an underground railway system.
What time frame are we talking here when you went there?
Oh, this is probably 4 years ago.
4 years, okay. Maybe well five. After the Andes expedition.
Yeah.
Context is critical?
Anyway, the context, this is after those expeditions. Actually, this is before I think it's before the second expedition, though.
Okay.
So it would have been prior to the second Takachi expedition. Anyway, they were doing this underground tunneling with this huge machine, and they broke into a chamber, which is not unusual because everything under Greece is built on top of itself, over and over. They found a chamber that was full of slabs with giants on the slabs in full armament.
What, real and giants lying flat on slabs? How big were the giants?
Well, he said that they were 3 to 4 meters tall. They were gigantic.
So they're 12 feet, 12, 13 feet.
Yeah.
In armor.
In armor, lying on marble slabs deep beneath Athens. And
holy cow.
Had to call, this is the middle of the night when it happened, they had to call their supervisor. There were three men on that crew. And I spoke with one of them. And basically, they shut down the whole operation. There was a whole team from the UN that showed up, and trucks showed up. They emptied the place out. No one knows what happened to the giants.
Well, no. We know exactly where they went. They went to Indiana Jones' vault, the archive, where the Ark is kept.
That's right.
That's where they went.
So there were swarming.
Continue their dig.
There were swarming around all kinds of government vehicles, or
yeah, Yeah, there were. There was all kinds of government vehicles there, security. They had the whole place just sealed off. Shop owners couldn't do business.
Now the guy,
they had it all cleared out of there within 24 hours.
The guy who told you this was a member of the actual crew, right?
Yeah, he was actually standing there driving the machine that was making the hole, and when it broke through, he had to stop and get out. The other two men were behind him feeding cables his direction.
And none of the crew had a smartphone on them. Nobody took pictures, of course.
Well, they, you know, probably not. They were just sort of in the middle of the night digging a hole.
Yeah, but who doesn't go anywhere with a smartphone these days?
Well,
even if you're on a construction crew. I'm just, you know, thinking out loud here.
That's how you and I think, Richard. But these guys are working and lucky to have enough money to buy food and pay rent. So it's not that uncommon to find that situation a little.
Well, anyways, I know you're running out of time here.
Well, before you leave, Ryan, first of all, Ryan is the guy who kind of put me back in touch with Jerry, so Jerry's on the show. I want to acknowledge that. My next question, Jerry, is when you say they were wearing armor, obviously coming from this eyewitness who was part of the crew, was he thinking it looked like armor, or was it something that just resembled medieval armor, but in fact it was different?
Well, he's, you know, being Greek and being familiar with the culture, of course, he was very familiar with the armament that the ancient Greeks would wear, and he said this is what it was.
See, that's critical. It was ancient Greek armor. That's an important detail. Okay.
You know, like something you might have seen in the movie 300 that sort of thing, I'm guessing.
But a lot bigger.
So,
12 feet.
Yeah, they're just big.
Yeah, 12, 13 feet. And that's twice your size, twice your height.
Oh, and there wasn't 15 or 20. There was like 100, 150 of these.
Oh, my God.
Well, Jerry,
thanks
for coming on and doing this. Yeah. I know it's kind of late, but next time you come on, and you got to come back on, I was hoping you can get into your relationship with Ingo Swann and the whole Lakhazar Filipov story. And I'll just let the next caller come in.
You're such a tease, Ryan.
All right.
Well, Lakhazar Filipov.
Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead, Jerry. Thanks.
Yeah, Philip. You're welcome. Thank you, Ryan. Good night.
So obviously we can't get into any of that this evening. So while we're waiting for our next call, let's go back to Radio with Pictures. I don't want to miss a picture here because the pictures are the story, and there's some amazing images. What should we look at next? And we got about 15 minutes, a little less than 15.
All right. Item number 10 is pretty interesting. Okay. That is an arch that wasn't there 35, 40 years ago, although it looks like it's been there for a long time. That is episode 7 at Expeditions TV, Doorway of the Gods. It's basically a plateau in southern Arizona that is made of crystal. Quartz crystal. And upon this plateau, there was another arch that has since crumbled. Might have been hit by lightning. We don't know what really happened to it. A guy by the name of Ron Quinn wrote this story, and we followed up, met Ron Quinn, and did a documentary about it. And basically, this place is a very high strangeness place because it's kind of... Well, for example, three young boys are playing around the arch. The Indian boys, you know, Native Americans. This is back in the 1800s.
Right.
Early 1900s. One of the boys runs, jumps to the arch, and vanishes. Freaked out, the other two go back, get the elders, come back, and they can't figure out what happened to the boy. He's not to be found. A woman throws, I think, a chicken through the, or a rabbit, through the arch, it vanishes. So they make this sacred ground and don't come around here anymore. Ron Quinn hears about the story. years later, here's Ron Quinn and his brother living nearby in a tent. They're hunting for geodes to sell to tourists, and there's a lot of them there. You can sit there at times and look through the arch, and while it might be gray and overcast where you are, when you look through the arch, the other side is sunny, and it's a different day altogether.
What? This sounds like something out of Star Trek, like the Guardian on the Edge of Forever.
Exactly.
In fact, it looks like it.
Sounds just like
it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's
well, this arch wasn't there. Ron Quinn lived out there for 3 years, knew this area well. Got this picture, and he says, I don't know where this arch came from. It wasn't there. So we went looking for it. We found the plateau after several days, and we found this arch and can't explain it. The whole place is just weird. We camped out there for several nights, Kathy and I, and then we took our team with us out there to investigate it. There are strange lights that float up out of this thing. UFOs flying through the mountains.
Have you taken any equipment to try to measure if there's anything going on technologically?
I did, and I couldn't get a reading on anything. It was as though I was just reading any other kind of rock, any other formation, any other place on Earth.
Sounds to me like an Accutron expedition. How far is it from Phoenix?
It's not that far. You can get there in about 5 hours.
Oh, well, then we just have to
We're wanting to go back, and we're thinking to go back and open it up to folks who want to come and join us. It's not an expensive thing to go do, and it's easy enough to do. You just have to be willing to, rough it for a few days. There's no water there. It's very harsh terrain.
So it really is an expedition. Okay, we got more people. I think we have Joy. Are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Good morning. Welcome
good
to the
morning,
other side
and
of
good
midnight.
And nice to meet you, Jerry. I have a
nice
question.
Nice to meet you, Joy.
Yeah, I'm in Santa Cruz, California. And I will be in Arizona in July, but that's probably not a good time to go.
I was going to say, July is not a time to go to this place, right, Jerry?
No.
With no water.
Like it. Aperture. It's either March or October.
Okay, actually, we're going to Santa Fe then, but anyway, it's just I go through Phoenix to get there. But there's a question I have about your picture of the Cumbamayo.
Are we talking the doorway?
No, Cumbamayo is the aqueduct.
Aqueduct, yeah. I see the large rock coming down, and then and on the other side, between that and the aqueduct.
This is image 14.
Yeah. There seems to be a ridge or something that's going around it that's kind of a lighter or different color gray that looks almost like it's constructed because it's so even.
It does look like that.
Does that go all the way around the rock?
Yeah, it does. And it's perfectly smooth.
Wow.
Where the water's at. In fact, it is created in such a way, and this is high strangeness, it's created in such a way that water running through it does not wear away the rock. And we've
run
into
this kind of rock
time
that
and time
is?
Again and again.
It's granite, I believe.
Yeah, that's granite. Yeah, it's granite.
But it's different from the other rock that's up above it.
No, it's all granite. The rock that's up above it off to the left, that's granite. It's covered with lichen.
Yeah, those dark brown thingies are patches of lichens.
Yeah, but how do they get that kind of smoothness and regularity? Because it looks like it's all evenly graded.
Yeah, it is.
Unless I'm looking at it wrong.
Well, remember, when I had Chris Dunn on, we were talking about the granite structures in Egypt that are carved to precision, like machine precision, optical precision, as Petrie said. So whatever this technology was, which is no longer with us, this stuff is very, very old. It's from a previous high-tech epoch, right, Jerry? And the technology is unknown because nobody publicly is using this stuff now to do anything.
Right, well...
The technology's lost.
Well, that's obvious.
Or has been hidden.
It's obviously also true with Aramumuru, because what in the world is that?
Well, if you take a look at that, which is, what is that, panel number 8, just let your mind rest for a moment. Look at this. It's a woman lying on her back with her arms at her side.
Okay. The goddess image?
Looking up at the sky.
Which image now?
Number
8.
Number 8, okay. You mean the figure on the you mean the figure on the top of the ridge?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Exactly. So her head is to the right, and then her breasts mm-hmm. are kind of just above the big square doorway, and the rest of her is to the left, and she's inclined, looking up at the sky.
Yeah.
So you're saying that's a goddess image?
Well, I don't know what it is, but according to what we've gotten. One way or the other, there was Aramumuru and his wife Aralamara, and they were from a continent called Mu.
And, what's inside of that?
You mean inside the doorway?
Yeah.
It's not a doorway. It's not a real doorway, right, Jerry? It's like one of those
right.
fake.
If you go to if you go to Expeditions TV. Just look through there. You'll find the video, the documentary.
At the end of the show, I'm going to give people links to where they can go and find all this stuff and go through your videos and linger and pause and go back and rewrite and rerun and all that. Because you can't do this even in 2 hours of radio with pictures. All we can do is hit the high spots and tease, madly tease.
Oh, you're just a tease, Richard. Okay, thank you, Jerry. Have a good night, Richard.
You too.
Bye.
Thank you, Joy.
Okay, so where should we look? Oh, that's an interesting thought. M says it looks like she's being restrained, like she's maybe a sacrifice.
Possible.
Okay.
Well, that could be. That sort of thing was going on at times.
Yep.
Hard to know.
Okay. In the few minutes,
let's we've got the few minutes we have left. Let me tell you about the Jeff Bird Project.
Oh, by all means.
Because that kind of fits in with some of this stuff in a way. This is basically a musical enterprise that we started back in June with Jeff Bird, and basically making new music. Don't know really a whole lot to say about it, but I just want folks to have a chance to hear about it and just to know that if they want to hear the music, you know, go take a listen, because I think you're going to be hearing a lot more from us. We have an album.
Well, didn't you say that one of the cuts we played tonight was nominated for a Grammy?
It was on the ballot.
Well, that's a nomination process. Okay. Wow. Which one?
You're Still Here.
Ah.
And I'm sure there'll be something, you know, for this next round of Grammys. There'll be other award ceremonies with different parts of our music on it. We've got an album coming out pretty soon. We're still working on it. But it's called The Big Cover-Up. And
that's telling.
It's going to be a collection. Uh-huh. And it is a collection of music that we have done covers on from the past 50 years, basically. I don't have a copy of this one that you can go listen to, but if you like Led Zeppelin, you might want to go to iHeartRadio and type in Jeff Bird Project and listen to a Led Zeppelin song we did called We're Gonna Groove. That's been getting a lot of attention because it actually sounds better than Led Zeppelin, according to a lot of folks.
Okay.
Which is really hard to do. I mean, if you were a musician and into music and trying to do Led Zeppelin music, people look at you and go, no one's going to help you.
Of course.
This particular song seems to have.
Okay, if people want to get hold of you, we've only got a minute left. I got to rush you. Sorry. Yeah, literally. How do people get hold of you so they can go on one of these incredible expeditions? And by all means, folks, bring an AK-47. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
That's a good sidearm. Well, just go to expeditions.tv and spell it an X. It's Expeditions
It's link number one under your items on Radio with Pictures, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you can just send me an email. You know, get on the mailing list, because if we do decide, because we haven't been doing trips the past few years, but if we do decide to offer something, like going down to Southern Arizona to that really strange place down there that we need to go back. I didn't even tell you about the pyramid inside of a cave, but
no,
there are things down there that we want to go and investigate.
Sounds to me like we need an Accutron project.
Find out.
Sounds like we need an Accutron measurement, because I have a technology that nobody else has got, and if there's something weird going on, it will detect it. I guarantee you, because it detected weirdness at Stonehenge.
We were down there, and I was telling Kathy, I wish I had that with me so I could do that test. There's something weird about this plateau, Richard. It really is.
Well, the unfortunate weird part about tonight is that we're out of time. There's our end theme for the evening. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. Thank you, Jerry Wills. We will obviously have you back. Well, folks, we actually have reached the end of another week. So until same time, same bat channel on Tuesday, just remember, third star on the left, straight on to morning, and remember Joe Bookman's dad. Good night, everyone.